This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You are not to be faulted for not being well-versed in where Texas stands today on voter ID. It's been a long, complicated journey, but most people don't want to know all that painful history about the law. They just want to know one thing, what they need to vote. And to explain that, here's a commercial that ran that with the state of Texas paid for that ran during the recent November general election season.
It's voting season in Texas, so we remind voters to show ID at the polls. If you've been voting with an approved photo ID, like your Texas driver license, keep that up. If you can't reasonably obtain an approved ID, now you can sign a form explaining why and show an approved document, like your utility bill. For more information, call 1-800-252-VOTE or visit votetexas.gov.
Now, that ran in English and Spanish, but don't count on that information helping you in the next general election because the legislature is working on a new voter ID law that they hope will pass the courts this time. Also, there are a lot of questions about that commercial and the overall public education campaign for voter ID and educating people about their voting rights. How do we know that these ads aired where people who most need that information could actually see them? Which demographics were targeted by this ad spending? Where was that money spent? Well, we don't know any of that because it's a state secret. That's according to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, the Republican. So do you think that you have a right to know how your tax dollars are spent to educate you about your voter rights? We want to hear from you this hour as we talk about that. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined in the first half hour by San Antonio State Representative Justin Rodriguez, District 125, a Democrat. For the full hour, we're going to have the great Al Kaufman, professor of St. Mary's Law School, former civil rights litigator, and also with us, no less great, Henry Flores, the political science professor at St. Mary's University. He's been an expert witness in more than 50 federal voting and civil rights lawsuits. It's great to have you all here.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So, Justin Rodriguez, you have filed a bill asking to make this information known about how the state of Texas spent money to educate people about their voting rights. Why did you do that?
Yeah, first of all, David, thanks for having me. I apologize for not being there in studio, but we're pretty busy here at the Capitol this week as we get ready for budget deliberations. But yeah, so we filed HB 3285 just in the last 2 weeks or so, but it goes back to work that my staff and I did during the interim. So in the fall of 2015, we sent a letter to, at that time, the Secretary of State, Carlos Cascos, requesting information related to the voter education outreach efforts that his office was charged with leading up to the 2014 general election. Primarily, you know, because of, you know, what the concerns that we were hearing about in the community about confusion on the voter ID law. Of course, this dates back to 2011. But, you know, we wanted to find out fully how those outreach efforts were made. We knew from various studies, and the one we referred to in our letter in particular was done by the University of Houston and Rice University, that basically said, look, due in part to some of the confusion, there was a significant drop-off in voter participation in the 2014 election, somewhere around 25% of the Texas voting age population turned out in that general election. So, you know, we wanted to get a little bit more information on that. So we went back and forth with the secretary at that time on that information. And you know, I would basically categorize it as we received you know, some minimally responsive information. Basically, you know, maybe where some of the ads were bought, who were the PR firms that were utilized, some paid media impressions. You know, like I said, very minimal information. And you know, based on that, you know, coming into this session, you know, I said, look, the reality is, number one, if I, as a legislator, which has some degree of oversight of the budget of the Secretary of State, could not get this information, how available is this information to the general public? So we filed House Bill 3285, essentially to shed some light on this, right? I mean, these are public dollars. You know, in this day and age of everything being available online, we thought, why can't the Secretary of State itemize these expenditures? Let the public know that their dollars are being used in a responsible fashion, in an effective fashion. And, you know, it's not any different from my perspective in what we ask other departments to do, right? I mean, it's accountability. It's good government. You know, when we write, we don't write blank checks and give them to our public schools and say, use them as you see fit. We ask for an accountability of that all the time. And so that was the impetus for filing the measure.
So let me ask you, Representative Rodriguez, what do we know? How much do we know about this ad campaign other than hearing the ad itself?
You know, I don't think we know a whole lot. And I'll tell you the reason why. I mean, subsequent.
Do we know what channels that they ran on?
So they gave information, some information about the broadcast outlets. For example, online on the Yahoo in Spanish or AOL Spanish, Telemundo, Univision, some stations like CNN. So they gave some information about where these ads, and mind you, this was not just TV, this was also radio and online advertising that was supposed to have been done. So we have a little bit of that information that my office received, but subsequent to that, myself and other legislators tried to get follow-up information, and we were essentially told we would have to sign a non-disclosure letter or agreement because of the ongoing litigation.
Okay, so do we know what time they aired? Or was it 3 o'clock on a Sunday morning, 3 a.m.?
Yeah, we were not giving prime time. Right. No, we were not giving that detailed of information. So it was just general. This is how many. If it was a online distribution, this is how many clicks or impressions it got. But we were not given the broadcast time. Some of the content, frankly, myself, being someone that's, I would categorize as pretty engaged in the process, I don't watch a whole lot of television, but certainly radio and on my computer quite a bit. I myself never saw any of this stuff or heard any of this stuff. And so I know $2.5 million, it's certainly a lot of money, but when you talk about, the big state like Texas, part of the, making sure these programs are effective is, how is the money spent, number one, and was it enough, right? Do we need to, as a legislative body, consider funding this more, particularly in an age where we are having so much confusion? And certainly it's being shown at the ballot box. We don't see as many folks participate. Certainly some would say, look, that's part apathy. But there's no question, and it's not just anecdotal. There has been study after study that said, look, because of the laws and the confusions of the 2011 law, there has been a dip in turnout. So really, for me, I want to know, is there a better way to spend this money? And the only way we can do that is by getting the information extracted from the Secretary of State's office,
which they say is a secret, and we don't have access to that information. We'll explore that further when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Back in 1 minute. You're listening to Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM here in San Antonio. This is The Source, and we're talking today about legislation that's been proposed in Austin that would increase transparency of the state's spending of public dollars on the voter ID education campaign, voter outreach, trying to get more people to the polls in Texas. We know that Texas lagging behind many other states in getting voter participation. Why is that? We've got a couple of statements here. We've reached out to the Ken Paxton's office, a response from their communications division from the Attorney General. Unfortunately, per policy, we cannot comment at this time. Also, a statement from the Texas Secretary of State, Ron Pablos, and he says, the Secretary of State's office has consistently followed the law with regard to disclosure of information and will continue to follow the law and the direction of the legislature. So Not a lot there, but we did reach out to those agencies and ask them to participate, and that is what they gave us. So our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980, if you want to join the conversation as we talk about educating the public about their voting rights. Let me turn to Henry Flores, a political science professor at St. Mary's University. You've served as an expert witness on more than 50 federal voting and civil rights lawsuits. How influential could it be where and when these ads are spent? Is that of a concern if someone is, if you have a close district race, if you're wondering, you know, not spending or overspending in certain parts of the state, could it influence voting trends?
Absolutely. You know, particularly in those areas where voter ID is particularly difficult. There's some communities that have difficult time getting the appropriate IDs, and folks that do have them aren't sure that they have the correct ones. That's where the money should have been spent on the ads more than anything else. So on one level, it really affects the turnout rates in those types of communities. And these are mostly minority communities, communities of younger voters and older voters. So in a close election, it could have a terrible impact. In other elections, in other areas of the state, it could increase the turnout rates. So, wherever those ads are played, it's going to affect some elections.
Now, $2.5 million, that was the budget for this ad campaign. How do we know if that was adequate?
Oh no, absolutely not. Matter of fact, former Senator Wendy Davis actually made a comment about that during her political campaign, in that. It takes $2.5 million just to run a decent congressional election in a congressional district. And you're talking about a statewide educational programming effort. $2.5 million won't get you a decent television ad, for heaven's sakes, to go statewide, because you got Dallas-Fort Worth markets, Houston markets. Those are all expensive markets, San Antonio, Austin, and so forth. You'd have to run the ads in Spanish down in the valley. And you're talking about radio and television as well. And $2.5 million doesn't even come close to what you would really need to have a proper and appropriate voter education program.
Now, we heard over and over again from Al Kaufman, I'm going to ask you this, professor of St. Mary's School of Law and former civil rights litigator, that the voter ID, the problem with it was that it intentionally discriminated against minority voters. Is that was that the fly in the ointment there?
Well, it certainly discriminated against minority voters.
And that's what the court's found.
The court has found that it certainly has a discriminatory impact on African Americans and Latinos. And the lower court found that it was intentionally done for that reason. But under either legal test, it's an illegal system now. And every court that's looked at it has found that the voter ID bill violates the law.
So where you spend the money on ads makes a difference if you're trying to reach those demographics. I mean, it's just seemed like, you know, we know certain demographics watch certain television shows, certain programmings, they have certain trends. If you want to have an effective campaign in order to inform them, like, hey, you can go vote. You know, you don't have a driver's license, but you got a utility bill, you can go vote. There's a right way and an effective way to do that. So is that a concern?
It's a great concern. In the legal case and the facts of the case are that the state has tried to diminish the votes of African Americans and Latinos, and that's been done for a long time. And once the courts found the state had violated the law, then the state's still fighting. And instead of devising a program that clearly was aimed toward those who were hurt by this bill, they had a broader vision of who to advertise with and who not to advertise with. And then they wouldn't tell people in the state, including State Representative Rodriguez and others, exactly where they spent the money. Now, I want to congratulate Representative Rodriguez for drawing up this bill. And one part of it I think we need to pay attention to, the vendors. They're the people who got the money from the state and devised the program. Under his bill, they could not get a contract with the Secretary of State's office to do this unless they agreed to divulge what they did. They tried to hide behind their trade secrets of, we don't want other advertising companies to know where we put the ads and they'll steal our secrets. But this bill would say,
that's not a secret. I mean, you know where you, if you work in the business, you know how to sell these, you know, put these ads on.
Well,
it's not like, you know, black magic.
Well, you have to tell the Secretary of State that, and indeed, I think that they convinced the federal judge even to protect that information. But I think his
bill. Well, let me say how you do that. Isn't a judge's job is to weigh the rights of individuals, the way of voting rights against the rights of this ad campaign to say, well, it's what's more important, to inform people about their voting rights or to allow this ad campaign to keep its secrets, which is not really a secret?
Well, I wasn't involved in that proceeding, so I do not know. I think the state argued that under the Open Records Act, they would not have to divulge the information. Also, the company said they had trade secrets involved. And to be honest with you, I think that I wasn't there. I didn't hear the reasons. But, I mean, it would be logical for a federal court to say there's enough issues in this litigation without getting into doing away somebody's trade secrets.
I'm going to go with Representative Rodriguez back to you, Justin, since we've only got you for a few more minutes. Where are we with this bill and also the fix, as they call it, for the new voting ID bill that's going through the legislature?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we just filed the bill, you know, within the last 2 weeks. So it'll go through the process of being referred to a committee, hopefully in the next few weeks moving forward. And then we'll get a hearing and hopefully have enough support at the committee level to get it out for some debate and discussion on the House floor. I will tell you, too, I mean, I've had an informal conversation with the new Secretary of State, Rolando Pablos, who I've known for a long time. And you know, a lot of this predates him since he was just sworn in January. So you know, I'm hopeful that we're able to work with his office on this piece of legislation and get something through that really, again, sheds some light and brings some transparency to the spending, because it's an important program. And I understand that the sensitive nature of, being competitive, and you know, the PR firms, you know, worrying about, you know, some of their advertising dollars and where it's going, but it certainly, you know, it's not a mystery, and I think it should be divulged to folks who are, you know, taxpayers. And so there is two bills in terms of your second part of your question that relate to voter ID. On the Senate side, SB 5, and I believe Phil King, Rep. Phil King, out of on the House side, 2481 is his House bill. The House bill has not been heard, and these are bills that relate to voter ID and now a kind of a new version of voter ID legislation in the 2017 session. I know the Senate bill, SB 5, was already heard in Senate State Affairs and voted out of that committee. I think there are some ways that we can hopefully, as those bills move, improve the process. You know, one of the things that I think we've advocated for, not just myself, but I would say advocacy groups, folks who are concerned about the status of the voting status of minority communities, would be to add the high school and college IDs to the list of acceptable photo identifications. That is not something that can be currently be used.
And that's not in the new bill.
It's not, right? And so that's something that we are looking forward to hopefully addressing, maybe as an amendment, or get some coalescence of folks that want to do and add that to the bill. There's also some pretty severe penalties that I think need to be looked at in the current bill that I don't think have changed much in terms of aggravated perjury and lying and things like this that I think are really ways, scare tactics to tell folks, hey, you know, we have this problem with voter fraud in our communities. The reality is, you know, that is the pretext for this piece of legislation, and I think we hear it not just locally but at the national level, is this voter fraud. And I think any reasonable person will tell you, look, we've looked at this, and I know there was a study that looked at from 2000 to 2011, I think it was by Arizona State, looked specifically at the state of Texas and November general elections, and over, you know, 36 million people casting ballots, there was about 100 cases of voter fraud. I mean, that is a rounding error when you talk about 100 out of 36 million votes cast. So these are things.
So, Representative Rodriguez, if we're going to have voter ID, if this is going to be a reality for Texas, why do we have to have such a strict system for voter registration then? Because obviously, if you can't fake in-person voting, voter registration then should be more relaxed to allow more people to register to vote because you don't even use your voter registration card to vote.
Yeah, and David, I would say you're preaching to the choir. Look, we have the past three, this is my third session, we've tried any different way to try and ease the process for folks to register to vote. I will tell you, even this session, there are discussions about online voter registration. I mean, come on, you know, everybody uses computers or smartphones nowadays, and folks are telling us behind the scenes that those bills are not even going to get heard in committee. So I would say, you know, for you and for others and for fellow Texans who are equally concerned about the ease of voter registration, we need to start talking to folks who are in leadership positions across the state who, for one reason or another, we can all, you know, make our own conclusions, are not excited about getting folks out to the polls. And that should concern all of us, right? I mean, this is a right that we all have, and it is being suppressed session after session and in courts. This is another example, of folks being happy with the status quo, and we shouldn't be.
Right. So when things that people get confused all the time is voter registration, goofy voter registration issues is not election fraud. No one ever got elected in office because Mickey Mouse was registered to vote. I mean, Mickey Mouse never showed up to vote. It's two different things. So, but is that something that people need to clarify?
Yeah, I certainly would say so, right? I mean, I think, the narrative that I think best fits whoever is in leadership, they want folks to believe one thing, and sometimes it confuses the two. You're right. I mean, to just blanket and say there's voter fraud, it's rampant, causing all kinds of problems with local elections is simply not the case, right? And so separating the two, like you mentioned, the voter registration from folks actually getting to the polls, is fits a different narrative for those that want to create that confusion and feed further into that into that narrative. So
yeah, and so will there be a hearing on your bill?
I'm hopeful, David. You know, that's up to the chairman, and certainly the speaker may have some say in that. But I have had some discussions. It's got to go through the process, get referred out of committee. But my hope is, and we'll keep you posted certainly, is sometime in the next couple of weeks we will get a hearing on this bill.
And one other question real quickly, as I still have you in for a couple more minutes.
Sure.
The Secretary of State's office, just in its normal course of duties, is supposed to be doing voter outreach. Do we have better information about how they're spending that money in overall voter outreach? Or is this just confined to this voter ID education issue?
So my bill is specifically for voter ID.
Right, but in general.
Yeah, in general, I would say this. There is money allocated that's proposed to be allocated in both the Senate and the House bill for the budget that, I think ranges for about $4 million for 2018.
And do we know how that money is spent?
We don't, right? And so that is part of the equation here, right? I mean, I'm hoping that this conversation, and we have the opportunity through the budget process over the next few weeks to add amendments to contingency riders to the budget so that we can explore how these monies are spent, not just on voter ID, but in general, right? I mean, I think this is something we need to do from one agency to the next, and certainly the Secretary of State should not be immune.
We're totally out of time. Thank you so much, Representative Justin Rodriguez. Filed a bill in the Texas legislature trying to get some transparency about how money is spent in Texas to inform people about their voting rights. This is The Source. We'll be back after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. We're back and we're talking about legislation that's been proposed in Austin that would increase transparency, how the state is spending public dollars to educate the people about their voting rights. Apparently, they don't want you to know how they're spending this money. And we established in the first half hour how they spend that money makes a big difference on who shows up at the polls. So do you have a right to know? Have you ever seen these ads? What impression did they have on you? Did you think that they were effective? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. We had to say goodbye to State Representative Justin Rodriguez, but now we're joined by Phyllis Ingram. She is the Voter Services Director and immediate past president of the League of Women Voters here in the San Antonio area. Well, we're getting her lined up in just a minute, but let's go to a caller. Tony is on the line, and Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having this program. Very informative. I just wanted to say, first of all, Justin Rodriguez, Representative Rodriguez, is not there anymore, but really glad he's proposing this bill. He's very accessible, really.
Oh, we just lost the call. So let's move on to another caller then. Scott is on the line, and Scott, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
A couple of things I wanted to say. I've got several adult children who have moved out of the state, and every year I get voter registration cards for them. And that's certainly a place where, you know, there could be some misrepresentation. And also, I thought that it was a state law that every adult had to have a Texas ID, whether they drive or not. Isn't that the case?
All right, Scott, those are good questions. Thank you for raising those. I think those are two major issues. And so Henry Flores, political science professor at St. Mary's University, you get a voter ID. I mean, maybe someone in your family even passed away, and you're still getting voter registration information for them. Is that a scandal?
No, it's not a scandal. What happens is that the various counties in the state who are responsible for keeping track of the registered voters in their particular jurisdictions are continually purging their rolls, and they purge them like monthly, except for some of the smaller jurisdictions because it costs too much money to do that, and they don't have the personnel to do the purging like that. So there's always a lag. There's always going to be a lag because of people moving in and out of the state a lot, people passing away, new young folks turning 18 every day. You can never really get an absolute perfect fix on who's officially registered and who's not officially registered.
What difference does it make?
It doesn't really make that much difference because registration is one thing. And if you're registered to vote, once you go vote, they'll check that registration against their computer system, databases they have to verify whether or not you are truly registered in that jurisdiction or you've cast a vote someplace else or whatever. And that's it. That's just fundamentally it. So registration is one thing. Casting a ballot is another step altogether.
Different. Okay. Is there a law that requires everyone in Texas, every adult, to have some sort of legal ID, picture ID?
Not that I know of.
I mean, if you have to have a license to drive, you have to have a license to do other things. But if you're not taking advantage of some state program, you're not required to have an ID.
All right. Okay. Let's bring in Phyllis Ingram. She's the League of Women Voters here in San Antonio, Voter Services Director. Phyllis, where do you think about the fact that the Texas Secretary of State's office is not forthcoming about how they spend money on voter outreach?
Well, the League has a longstanding position on transparency in government, and so we are not overwhelmed with the way that's being handled.
That sounds like League speak for you're pig biting mad.
Well, you could put it that way.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think that there was a lot of education, or at least if there was, I wasn't aware of it, and we tend to try and keep up on these things. So
you do a lot of voter education yourself. The League of Women Voters, that is one of your big things, is do voter outreach, get people to the polls, educate them about what's happening. Did the Secretary of State's office reach out to you guys and try to use your infrastructure to educate people about what's going on?
They did not. We did, however, as much as we could keep up with it because it was kind of a moving target the last election as to just what requirements were going to be. But we kept distributing information at our voter registration events and candidate forums and things like that. So we take that as part of our mission to do that, but we were not asked to.
Now, not only were many voters confused about what the state of the voter ID law was, but also many of the voting judges at the voting stations, they didn't know what was going on either. And they were putting up the wrong signs. They were excluding people. They weren't aware that you could vote at that time with a utility bill. So Henry Flores, political science professor at St. Mary's University, what do we make of that?
Well, what we make of it is that our election judges aren't getting educated properly. And part of the problem is that election judges are part-time folks that get they're like seasonal workers. They get hired.
They're great people.
They're great people. And you know, when I retire, I plan to be an election judge, to tell you the truth.
You're never retiring.
No, yes, I am. But anyway, that's another story altogether. No, you know, and so they're volunteers, and they're not necessarily up to date on all the law and all the requirements. And they've got a very short training period that the county goes through for them. And in urban counties like San Antonio and Bear or Dallas-Fort Worth metro area or Harris County, you're talking about huge numbers of people, and not all of them are going to be awake to the training, be aware of what's going on, absorb everything that's going on, and maybe even some of the training may be faulty. I don't know. But I heard in this last election of a lot of anecdotal evidence of folks not knowing what the right ID cards were and so forth and so on. I show my passport every time I go to vote, and when I show a passport, sometimes I flabbergast the judges. They're not sure what that is, you know. But so that's really my take on it.
All right.
Well, having been through, if I may, having been through that training, it is a tremendous amount of information in really a few hours' time. And the Secretaries of State's information on polling place, I mean, it's a huge notebook. So I think that at least in Bexar County, they do a good job of trying to train the poll workers. But as the professor said, you know, it's something that you do maybe twice a year if you do it that often. And even though you're given a refresher, it's a lot of information.
In this case, the problem was that the message for so long was illegal people are voting. People are voting illegally. You've got to have a picture ID. So that
or
message,
voting multiple times.
That message got out there, and that was unnecessary. And the fact is, the poll judges are used to the old procedure. That was a whole new procedure and an unfair and unwise one. Then when they made minor changes under the litigation, it was hard to get that message out. But instead of the state just saying, let's just withdraw from this crazy law, this election, just go back to the way it was in 2010 and before, instead of doing that, they had to preserve as much of it as they could, and that made it confusing. So each step along the way, the state has made it harder for people to vote.
But some people say that there is benefit to those who would like to see lower voter turnout, particularly in certain demographics that may not be get a lot of information about current events, to confuse the system, muddy the waters, and people stay home. You know, so there's not a whole lot of incentive for some people to try and clear things up. Henry, can you address that? Is that something that happens? I mean, in your experience as an expert witness dealing with civil rights litigation and voting rights litigation?
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know how many cases I've testified in Texas, but there's been a whole bunch of them, and some of the civil rights attorneys will actually tell you there's as many as 200 more cases out there waiting to be filed, because the state of Texas itself has written the books on voter suppression. And, you know, I've testified in the courtroom after producing a lot of evidence. I've concluded on several occasions to the judges simply saying that the way Texas goes about managing its election system is really a way to minimize turnout. Texas doesn't seem to want people to vote. And if you can keep voting turnout low, well, then you can get certain groups of candidates in, and you have control over the public policy process by a minority number of people.
So you're saying the fact that Texas has one of the lowest rates for voter participation in the country is not by accident, it's by design.
Absolutely. It's by design.
And Phyllis Ingram, any? I know you can only. You're nonpartisan. League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization. I know because my mom was one time president of the league when I was a little kid.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, many many years ago. So and she was blasted by Paul Thompson in the newspaper for being so. you know, how do you get better information out, particularly when you don't have a lot of resources?
Well, I couldn't agree more with what the professor just said. You know, the league, again, has a longstanding position on voter fairness. It's one of the things that we're testifying on up at the Capitol this legislative session. So, you know, I think maybe some of the local stations are doing a better job. Certainly you do a great job of trying to educate voters. The league certainly publishes a voter guide prior to every election to try and get information out. But, you know, there are forces that are very successful.
Exactly.
With 3,000 people voting in a district.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the break. We'll get Tony back on the air. I got his call back. The number to call in, if you got a question or a comment about your voting rights, knowing your rights, and helping others know their rights to go vote, the number to call in is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Well, next time you go vote in a general election, what do you need to have with you in order to go vote? You know, there's all sorts of questions about that. They're working a new bill in the legislature. Under the present form of this bill, it would now allow voters older than 70 to cast ballots using expired but otherwise acceptable forms of ID. That's one alteration that they're making, trying to fix the voter ID law in Texas and make it pass muster in the courts. They haven't had much luck with that over the years. They keep being turned down and saying that this is discriminatory against minority voters. And in the last voting session in November, they were told they needed to spend $2.5 million, the state of Texas, in order to educate voters about their rights in order to deal with the voter ID confusion. How that money was spent is a secret, and we want to know why is that and how that money was spent, and what do you think about that? Do you think you have a right to know how money is spent in order to educate you about your voting rights, your money, tax dollars, money? The number is 210-614-8980. And let's get Tony back on the air. And Tony, welcome back. We got you again. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, first of all, you have an excellent panel. My name is Tony Villanueva, Al Kaufman, Dr. Flores, and Representative Rodriguez, who's excellent, excellent representative, I believe. My comment is, you know, low voter turnout is oftentimes blamed on voter apathy. And it's unfortunate. I don't think it's apathy. As I walk the neighborhoods or talk to people, there's a lot of interest, but I do believe there's a lot of confusion because there's lack of clarity in the information and education about where to vote, which election is coming up. And, you know, a lot of the media outlets, traditional media outlets, they're flooded with candidates' information that we really need to keep up with, you know, the money spent for the campaigns, that voter education. You know, we need to be more effective with the you know, where those funds are spent to make sure that it gets to the, you know, the voters. And I'm not sure that's happening. And so I favor this bill. I think we, you know, how can we as citizens, you know, make this a more effective educational process when we don't have access to how they're using this money and how it's being spent. So, yeah, this is a very good bill, and I think it's a great idea from Representative Rodriguez.
All right, Tony, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. So Al Kaufman, professor at St. Mary's School of Law, tell me about where we are with the Voting Rights Act. Is it restored? Where are we with this thing?
Well, in 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court really erred and 5-4 decided the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional. That was a great mistake. But the reason for the Voting Rights Act is so clear in Texas. For instance, you told me about the legislature is considering a new quote, improved, unquote, voter ID bill. Under the Voting Rights Act, that would not go into effect until it had been declared that it wasn't going to discriminate. So it put the burden on the state to show it would not discriminate.
It had to have clearance.
It had to have clearance. And that was very helpful in these cases because the state knew the state would not be able to get through a voting change unless it could meet that burden.
Well, what happened the day after the U.S. Supreme Court decided that the Voting Rights Act was no longer valid?
Well, the day after, the Texas state of Texas immediately implemented its voter ID bill again. It immediately implemented all of its redistricting plans again, even though they had been found to violate Section 5 or Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. So, I mean, the bill was so important, and I hope that the people in Congress, now that bill comes from Congress, that Congress can pass another bill like that. It was very helpful. Back to this issue, though, it's important to remember that Texas does have very low voter participation and has for a long time. However, it depends on the election. You know, the general elections for president, there's a much higher voter turnout than in the other elections.
Midterm
elections. And the people in the know who votes each one of those times. And there, I think there's concern among many state leaders that if all the people who voted for the presidential election were to vote in a state election, there might be a change in leadership in the state.
Because we vote for governor in the midterm off-year election.
That's right. So we voted for governor in 2010 and 2014. The next one's 2018.
But we don't do it for senator. I mean, it's every 6 years, so every once in a while.
That's right. But every other time the senator comes up. But for the governor, lieutenant governor, most of the statewide offices are every 4 years. But the issue is that there's a clear disparate impact on African-American and Mexican-American persons in these bills, the voter ID bill. And indeed, in the redistricting bill recently, that court found that it was intentionally discriminatory and had a discriminatory effect. So the state of Texas has this history. And again, instead of just saying, well, let's just do away with that discrimination, let's do away with these devices that limit voting and limit minority voting and get back to a time when everybody can vote, we're encouraging to do it.
Okay. Another caller, Jim, is on the line. Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I agree with what the speaker was just saying. The Shelby County, Alabama versus Holder, where Texas had immediately restrictive voting laws ready, but you got to remember it's a state that's had white primaries, had illegal poll taxes, laws going all the way back to Jim Crow. But I see a connection between that and gerrymandering, because if you can have low turnout and get your base out every time, you can pick the congressional districts and get a one-party rule. And if you discourage people from voting in the regular elections, then they're going to stay home at governor and the off years as well.
Okay.
That's
all right,
my comment. I'll hang up.
Jim, thank you for that call. Gerrymandering, basically engineering districts so that you can pick your voters and stay in office. So we saw a recent ruling on that here in Texas. So Henry Flores, this is your specialty.
Yeah, actually, I was the expert in that case. And what we discovered was the way that they drew Congressional District 23, Congressman Hurd's district right now,
this has been a contested district
for a long, long time. I've been the expert every time it's been contested as well, going back 10 years or so. But anyway, or more. But essentially what they did this last time around was something very interesting. They went around the entire perimeter of the district, and they took out the voting precincts that were high-performing precincts for Mexican-Americans or Latinos and put in low-performing precincts. So they literally switched precincts, took out the high-performing precincts, put in the low-performing precincts, so the district looks like it's a majority Latino district, but it won't vote that way because of the turnout rates. So the gerrymandering, the caller was right, gerrymandering can be done in such a way that you can control who turns out in which elections various times. And I want to clarify one thing, though, also about the Voting Rights Act is still constitutional. The only thing that the court did in the Shelby County decision was to negate Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, which is the bail-in provisions that required the districts to pre-clear their districts. You can still bring a lawsuit under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which is what happened in the congressional redistricting case. And Also, the current voter ID lawsuit is under Section 2 as well.
Okay, another caller, Chris Quinn with Christian. Christian, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, I just want to make a statement that when any political group tries to suppress a vote, it is probably the most un-American thing anyone can do. I mean, voting is the most important thing to our democracy, and it's just disgusting.
Okay, Christian, thank you for that call. I appreciate that opinion. And Phyllis Ingram, your reaction to that?
Well, obviously, I agree with him very strongly. And to go back to the redistricting, you know, there are bills filed almost every session to try and get an independent citizens commission to do redistricting to make it a little more fair without any attachment to any of the legislators. That bill would go a long way, I think, to leveling the playing field because, as has been said, the way it is right now, it's very easy to just knock people out of the opportunity to vote.
Right. So the way we have the system right now is whoever the party is in charge in Austin, they get to draw the map, and they can do it in
indoor. Correct.
And they do it in a way that to try and protect their lawmakers and maybe eliminate some people they don't like too much. But if we had an independent body, then we wouldn't have such funky looking districts that would like start up in Universal City and go all the way down to McAllen. But how would that work? How would we get that? That would go against the legislature's own best interest to do something like that, Phyllis.
Well, it would. It's been done in other states, and there are different ways to go about it. You know, one way is to have groups nominate somebody and then
but
have
But it's
going
to take a swell
auditor.
Of the people coming up from the ground to really call
yes,
for this.
Yes, it is.
All right. So, Henry yes. Flores, you want to join in on this?
Oh, no. I was just – what I was suggesting was maybe the League of Women Voters should be put in charge of drawing all the congressional districts. They're nonpartisan and very fair.
Well,
the league.
As soon as you put
them
in charge of something, I don't know.
The league up in Austin did work with other groups, not just the league, but a bunch of groups joined together, and they did get redistricting for their city elections. So it can be done. It takes a lot of people working together. You know, there are some really strong minority groups that could be involved in that. It wouldn't be as difficult, but like you say, it's the will of the people because both parties are guilty of it. It's just whoever happens to be in power at the time benefits themselves.
And this is happening in other states, and they're seeing big results as well of trying to draw maps that get more moderate candidates in office so they can reach compromises and end this great partisan divide that we have. That's one theory that people think if we had fair redistricting, that would make a change. Well, I want to thank you, Phyllis Ingram, Voter Service Director over at the League of Women Voters here in San Antonio, and also with us, Al Kaufman, Professor at St. Mary's School of Law, and Henry Flores, Political Science Professor at St. Mary's University. This is The Source.